I was just we were just talking about JT's beautiful child before this started, and I was like, man, she's so cute, I would eat her up. And then I stopped myself and I was like, man, maybe I should give some context to this, maybe it's like culturally insensitive. He was like, nah, we do the same thing in the States and so on, which reminded me of like a small story of you know, this uncle who lives in the Balkans, friend of mine, actually went to visit his cousins, which live in Germany, and they're kind of like Germanized or whatever to an extent. And, you know, some of the cultural norms kind of don't exactly fit, I'll use those terms. And he got into a very weird situation because, you know, in the Balkans, it's absolutely normal when you see like a small boy or whatever from a family that you're close to, and, you know, you tease him, you talk to him, and you ask him, oh, is the dick growing? How's the dick? You know, you literally say shit like that. And this dude goes to fucking Germany. He speaks German because for some reason all of us in the Balkans do. I mean, we won the war, and yet we do learn the languages because we want to clean their toilets. But no, and he was like over there and he sees him, and it's like for the kid's birthday or some shit, or like I don't remember exactly what, but there's a shit ton of other people, mostly Germans there. And, you know, midway during the day, you know, he's on his third beer and, you know, he's alone with his little cousin, but not really alone because there's 20 people around. He's like, oh, how's your dick, cousin? Is it growing? No. This fucking 35 year old dude asking the 7 year old. The Germans lost their fucking shit, started being aggressive or whatever. Oh. And people needed to, you know, they were coming from a good place as well. Like, what the fuck is this pedophile doing here? Mm. But no, it's completely normal. That and the international one that I think exists in all countries. When somebody's told, they ask him, "Do you play basketball?" That is
how's the weather
biggest
up there?
First world pet peeve. Oh yeah, fucking cut. <cunt. laughs>
Yeah, that's not one we have in the States.
Speaking of pedophilia.
There's a segue for you.
Tell us about some of your experience.
I remember when I was way younger, what I used to when I want to
like, are you sure you
want to
say this on the podcast?
No, don't worry. I would want to improve my English, right? So I had like an open Skype account, or fuck, I don't remember, one of the either Skype or the one the other one, the green, fuck, I don't remember his name. ICQ? I don't fucking remember. People know what I'm talking about. I used to have like an open profile because I would want whoever to, so I can chat with them. So as I'm doing this as like a fucking 8-year-old, basically, because I want to learn English, improve my English. A little bit older than 8, I guess. Maybe like more like 10. And I remember there would be these fucking people who would see, because you have your age there, right? And there'd be these fucking weirdos who would come in asking you it's as bad as you imagine it. And I had like a strangely like pragmatic like tit for tat thing in my head where I was like, you know what? This guy actually wants to speak and he wants to talk with me a lot. So I'm actually improving my English, right? and he's getting to speak to a kid if he wants.
Fair trade.
Oh my god! Oh. I think I did that for months. And then afterwards I was like, yeah, this is just getting weird.
Go on.
No, that's it. That's just my.
I swear I had a similar situation, just arguably worse, because I remembered it when I was like, I don't know, 25, that I probably had like a relationship back when I was 13 with probably like a 40-year-old or something, because like it made absolute sense back then through some forums. There was this girl from the capital city. I'm from the small city. Yeah. She's super into me for some reason, but my 12-year-old brain, 13-year-old brain isn't getting it. She says she's my age. She's sending me pictures. I'm sending her pictures. Thankfully, I don't think I sent anything lewd or whatever. Mm. For like months, we were like doing back and forth, and she was like extremely cute or whatever, which makes me think like when I became an adult, Jesus Christ, like I got catfished real fucking hard. Mm. Hopefully by someone my fucking age, but it would make no sense. I wasn't a good looking kid, at least to non pedophiles. I was pretty nerdy, stupid. Like I was not charismatic at fucking all. And let's be honest, back in those days, not all the girls on forums, okay? They were, you know, doing actual fun stuff, not on fucking gaming forums or whatever the fuck. So yeah, I guess, you know, when I count all the relationships that I've had with the biggest age gaps or whatever, I should add a pretty yeah. big one. Because I don't think there was a girl from the capital, that's all I'm saying.
Sus. I wonder how many little Iraqi boys, little Balkanoids out there are on chat roulette trying to learn English.
Oh my god,
this awesome. Might be oversharing, but I remember like once or twice, but I was over 18 at that point, and I'm in the mood or whatever the fuck, and I don't want to check out just the usual adult websites, and I'm like, oh man, remember they told, like, people said about, you know, those rooms, and you know, there's people like doing sex stuff on it, and I, for some reason, you know, I'm a cis straight guy, so I was expecting women there, which obviously Jesus, though, the amount of penises I saw in the like 15 minutes was absolutely impressive. But I was gonna say,
almost as many penises as I do.
Yeah,
at work, in my professional job.
Oh, it was Hakeem the whole time. He was exactly live streaming right. from the office.
I'm unironically not disgusted by like dicks, like, you know, showers and gyms. But like the rest of the male body freaks me the fuck out. Like,
really?
Fucking hair. I have to deal with hair. Oh Lord, have mercy on me. No.
You can just shave the hair.
Yeah, I guess. But like the chest and the voice and beards. Oh my God. Huh. Kissing a beard, oh man, good luck. Respect to everyone who's into it, but not for me. Dicks, okay.
I have no trouble kissing Eugopnik's beard. So, yeah. And I'm a cis straight man. So
yeah, and you can have like little snacks in there. You can have little crumbs
exactly
from the from the cookies you were nibbling. Oh yeah, you get to
exactly
share.
You're right.
For the audience, yeah, I make them shave every time they come visit me in my hometown before we do the fun stuff. Right? Yeah. You guys have anything to share? I have like a life destroying moment that I've had. I don't know, you know, about you guys, but I just watched the last episode of Succession 2 days ago, and holy shit, and thank you God that I have this like communism thing I believe in, because I would have nothing to live for right now. You know, I know that if you haven't watched it and you see any stills from the show, it just looks like LinkedIn stock footage, but you know, that shit's almost on par with The Sopranos in my opinion. I'll miss it. The anti-capitalist message without being too preachy, the writing, the twists and turns, you know, it was a day to remember when it ended. And I mean, I liked it so much that even as like my part of the world has gotten a few steps towards the brink of another devastating conflict, I'm still like not checking any of that shit, only checking out like analysis of the show and the last episode, what people think will happen after it. But yeah, like as a dear IRL comrade of mine said, don't worry, somebody will have to tweet from the trenches, so there's a job for us. But other than that, right now I'm super bloated. For all this shit talking about over consumerism and so on and so on, I have this like sushi place near to where I live now, and you know, it's a all you can eat fucking thing. And I went there, and I'm so glutinous that even after I had like my first
glutinous,
I'm such a gluten content
boy.
I'm such a gluten. No, I'm such a fucking glutton that like I looked at that shit and like I ate the first two pieces, and the fish was obviously very fucking bad, but like, I just gave this much money for a buffet, so I'm at least gonna eat two times what I just fucking paid for, and I am literally like dying right now. Usually, when I pull down my movable desk, my stomach, which I do have a pretty big fucking gut, but it doesn't like actually go on the fucking desk. Now it is on the actual physical desk. I look like Jabba the Hutt fucking recording a podcast. but one question, like genuinely. To both of you, how do these places make money? And especially in the US, I mean, I don't want to sound fat phobic right now or whatever the fuck, but you guys can eat like two fucking trucks and go back to dessert. How do these places not go under? Like, seriously.
I think they generally probably charge over what would be the price of like a starter and a main dish and a drink. And most people have just about that much. And I mean by like a good 85% of clientele.
Most of Americans.
Well, I can't speak for Americans. That's where JT has to step in.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. It's low quality food most of the time, or low-ish, like passable. But also, yeah, the average person who comes in is going to, you know, the restaurant's at least going to break even because they're not eating all that much. You have the champions who come in and like, I'm going to be here for 6 hours. I'm going to eat, you know, three full pizzas, all that stuff. But that's not the average person.
Understood. Wasn't there like a restaurant that was like, this is extremely getting dark now, but super fucked up. Like how could, again, capitalism, am I right? I'm so edgy, you got me. But there, wasn't there these few restaurants that were all you can eat and they like gave you free food if you were over, I don't know, 200 kilos?
Yeah.
Like that's, how is that, like if a dealer did the same thing to like a heroin addict, we like, rightfully, Jesus Christ, man, that's super fucked up. But they, like these people are addicted and they're giving them, what the fuck? How is that legal?
It's the US, that's America, that means my freedoms, okay, please.
It's the Wild West, baby, we can do what we want. I'm
trying to think, do I have a buffet story? I remember one time I grabbed a family member of mine and forced them to walk for like an hour to this buffet place. And then we finally get there it's supposed to be, it's like, oh, you have the a la carte or whatever the fuck it's called, like you can order from the menu or you can go get the buffet, and we're like, we'll do the buffet. I remember it was like, I don't know, it was a certain price, and I, being the like trying to factor in exactly how I could get the most worth out of this place.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, we have to eat this amount of food for us to, you know, break even. And I was, that day I felt like I wanted them to go under. I didn't want to just break even. So it got to the point, and I don't eat a lot actually generally. But I guess after the fucking trek, the hike that we took, I remember at the end the waitress kept coming around trying to pull the menus away from us. They're like, no, fucking, because you ordered them in. It's a regular menu, but you ordered it in to the desk, to the table. But yeah, and afterwards I had the best coconut ice cream of my life.
Coconut ice cream, huh? I've never had that.
How good is your memory, mate? Like, you remember what you had after you went to some random buffet probably, 3 years ago? You remember the type of ice cream you had after?
3 years. Have you
three
this
years?
This is four years ago. It was 4 years. That is February. February 17th.
They should dissect that fucking brain. That is impressive. Yeah.
No. I, the only reason I remember the actual date is because I had some free time then.
That's so sad. I gotta jot this one down.
I'm going to cry. That is sad.
That didn't come out. I didn't intend for it to come out. That's so sad. Hello and welcome back to the Deep Program, everybody. Today will be a juicy, spicy topic. Everybody knows that we're the authoritarian red fash tanky
Kyle.
Podcast. Yeah. Exactly right. And as a result, we need to break into this topic a bit and see what we can break into the... What is that fucking nut called? Is it a walnut? The one with that looks like a brain. Is that a walnut?
I don't eat nuts. I know, peanuts.
Jesus Christ.
That's what you were saying yesterday.
You know, fucking...
We've been over... I think it's a walnut. I think it's a walnut. Let's go with walnut.
Walnut. Hold on.
All tankies are
walnut.
Stupid.
Yeah, we need to break into this fucking walnut. All right. Is that... Wait, what? There's in a nutshell. Uh-huh.
That's right, what you were going for? Oh.
Yeah. I was like, walnut, nutshell, the thing. What the shit, the kernel inside is what I want to fucking get to.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Anyways, we would like to thank all our patrons who we couldn't actually do the show without. So thank you everybody who supports us. This allows us the free time to actually do this. Please do go check out the merch and First Thought, all that kind of stuff. We'll go over this later. Let's start with a proper introduction, okay? Today's discussion will be mostly about the term tanky or tanky discourse, and then maybe we'll touch on authoritarianism and the concept of it. If we have the time, otherwise it will be a different episode. To start, okay, and this is a general, I guess, TLDR. If you don't want to listen any further than this, this is all you need to know. The term tanky and calling people tankies, all this stuff, it's a joke. All right, it's a meme, a goof, and a gaff. All right, it isn't something real.
Fugazi, Fugazi. I fucking love that scene. Sorry, yeah.
It's not real. It exists only online. It's usually said by people who aren't leftists to begin with. It's usually used as a way of shutting down discourse before it begins. It's the best way I can parallel it is the way conservatives use woke. Right, it's a completely meaningless fucking term. On the inverse, liberals will say tanky. And it's completely fucking meaningless. Let's get into the actual history of it, though. Do you guys, boys, have any comments to what I just said?
I think it's worth noting that all of us have been labeled tankies, like, by the, I won't say any names, but the big, you know, the debate streamers, that kind of person. We've all had reaction videos to our content, which is, including my content, which is very, very mild.
Yeah, it's a very... nebulous term that just seems to be applied to anybody regardless of what their actual background or political perspective is. I find it hilarious that I've sometimes seen like things as strange as like, okay, sometimes I've seen like one anarchist call another anarchist tanky, which is funny enough, but sometimes I've seen conservatives talk to other these people or liberals speak to each other and then they'll call each other tanks. It literally has so lost strange. All fucking meaning.
That's called Noam Chomsky a tanky the other day. Then this was, one of the streamer guys. Yeah. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, he became a tanky after they found out that he was on Epstein's Island or whatever the fuck happened. Of course, like I knew that Chomsky would eventually like go down through some bullshit, right? It wasn't his dog shit takes on almost everything. I mean, no. He's done some decent work. I'm not gonna be too rude to the man, but it just so happened to be this. I wouldn't have guessed. Yeah. But all right.
But that's the scariest part. That the normies got to the fucking term.
Yeah.
Like now you see like Fox News articles using the word tanky. Like the normiest of normies, the most vanilla of mayo fucks, right? Yeah. Now fucking use it as a free for all. Which
good because that's good. Yeah. That means the term will die even fucking quicker. That's what we need.
Exactly. And what is even worse is that now it's objectively uncool. Now you're not only wrong when you use it, but you're also
now you're a dweeb.
Uncool.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for an official, what's it called, like a U.S. government organ to tweet out and call something or someone a tanky. Then that will be, I think, the final nail in the comment.
Probably happened.
Put it on the state sponsors of terrorism list.
Exactly. Just,
Cuba, DPRK, tankies.
Exactly. Oh my God. Anyways, let's discuss the origins. The original term tanky, which by the way is an incredibly unimaginative name, it was taken from British left-wing, it's considered to be a derogatory term, I guess, from the British left-wing of the 60s, 50s, actually more accurately, for people who supported Soviet intervention in Hungary at first. I'm not going to give the fucking TLDR, although I did write like a paragraph on it, so, yeah, but I'm not going to go into that. Anyways, so nowadays, because the Soviet Union is no longer here, and tanks aren't rolling into Budapest or Prague, I mean, NATO ones are, but that's a conversation for another time. So we won't...
And the free capitalist Russian ones, and the free capitalist Ukrainian ones. Yeah, yeah.
You see exactly right.
How,
exactly.
Well, after we kicked out of the Soviets, how like there's no tanks anymore. Sorry,
I still remember, what was it called? It was the Red Dragon thing. It was a huge NATO exercise across Europe that basically none of the Europeans wanted. And people would go out and throw like rocks and stuff at NATO vehicles passing by. And then it became in several, particularly Central European, and I think some of the Eastern European NATO members, it became illegal to go. You could be arrested and sent to prison for vocalizing that you don't want NATO there by coming up with signs or protesting or throwing shit at the vehicles and whatnot, which is, of course, only the most democratic of... Anyways, that's a discussion for another day. Nowadays, okay, since there's no Soviet Union, there's no... that entire period is over. It's used mostly by people who think they're leftists. Very rarely do genuine leftists say it unironically. I think in the most serious of cases, there's like a hint of irony or a hint of comedy to it. But anyways, it's used by people who think that they're leftists to demonize people who are usually to the left of them on a particular issue. That's one way you'll come to realize that a lot of the people who use this term use it incredibly nebulously. I don't even know if that's a term, but you know what I mean. It's just up in the air. It doesn't mean anything concrete. So yeah. So on one side you have
speaking
people like
of which,
this,
the program is on Nebula from now on.
That is true. But yeah, exactly. So one side is just liberals and anti-communists who just want to insult anybody to the left of them. Another side is usually also liberals and anti-communists who want to use it as an insult towards anyone who defends or even clarifies misconceptions about, and that's usually the most common one, clarifying misconceptions about former socialist countries, be it Cuba or the GDR or the DPRK or the Soviet Union or something like that. Buzzword, like terminology like this, again, like woke, it's used sometimes also in place of another term, which we see on occasion, but I don't think anybody genuinely means this, red fascist or red fash, which is supposed to indicate that, no, you are just like an actual fascist, which, like, you know, combination of state and corporate power, it doesn't make sense, really, the way that they're trying to ideologically put together, but with a red coat of paint. You'll come to realize also, because of this, none of these have any ideological consistency. Not only is the word vague, but all the terminology that they base it off of has absolutely no ideological background. So it really is just a boring insult. And the worst part about it is, because it doesn't even sound interesting, it's not even fun to say, it just sounds kind of fucking stupid. Yeah. So it just comes off, being mostly silly. There is another side, and this is, I think, a more common one that you see, and probably the most common one. And it's anybody who, usually a Marxist-Leninist, or a person who identifies as a Marxist-Leninist or derivative thereof, who supports certain policies that used to exist or are part of the like corpus of Marxist-Leninist theory, which by extension is the vast majority of Marxist theory nowadays. I mean, in historic praxis, in case people misunderstand me, usually meaning dictatorship of the proletariat, the concept of democratic centralism, the idea that there should be a certain like internal security apparatus to maintain the gains of the revolution, that there's an active suppression of the bourgeoisie and former bourgeois elements, these things, or basically clarifying or supporting or identifying with, I guess, any former, quote-unquote, actually existing socialist country. This is what usually gets the label thrown at you most. In a nutshell, something that I'm fucking getting right for once. In a nutshell, it's meant to usually dismiss or ostracize Marxist-Leninists in particular, but other leftists who identify with the things I just mentioned, without actually engaging with the argument or offering some sort of counter-argument. Most often, in my personal experience, I've been doing this for a while, my personal experience is usually liberals who like to do their little cosplay as leftists that throw this term out. Most genuine, serious leftists, and by that I mean people outside the internet, of course, because the internet is real. Most actual dedicated leftists, I've never actually seen them call anybody or refer to anything as tanky in real organizational spaces. So yeah, woke for communists, that's literally what it is. It's just a buzzword. One more thing before the boys kind of take over. There is something that is a bit like, I guess, to the chagrin or to the sheer cope of certain liberals that like to, you know, do this cosplaying. The vast majority, and people sometimes get irritated when I've said this because I've said this prior, a vast majority of the left in the world globally is in the imperial periphery. It's not in the West. And the vast majority of the left in the imperial periphery, which is, by extension is the vast majority of the left globally, identifies with or is a derivative of Marxist-Leninist states, Marxist-Leninist thought, Marxist-Leninist theory, and the vast majority of them could quote-unquote have the tanky label thrown on them. And this is problematic not because I'm not trying to be like, ha, see, like, oh, you know, this is where most of... That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is the fact that the vast majority of leftists, usually brown and black leftists, in the imperial periphery, would be referred to as such by mostly white Western quote-unquote leftists, it just makes it seem like, oh, the only people who are so-called non-tanky, the only people who have this, you know, the correct line happens to be in the Western left, usually white and usually in the West.
Yeah.
And it seems a little bit infantilizing and Eurocentric. Massively. To have that perspective, and this is something that always is missing from the conversation. It's also used as a way of dismissing, by extension, lots of actually existing socialism or previous socialist experiments, which were by vast majority not white. And again, it kind of leads into this Eurocentrism that has been a problem in the left, particularly in Marxism, since its inception, really, and only since the 60s, 70s has it slowly started being dealt with, and even then, not really.
Yeah.
All movements which are defined as tanky and then... an extension defined as having, to one extent or another, bastardized the socialist idea in one way or another, happens to always be in places which, you know, the one calling people tanky aren't from places which those people who are calling other people tankies consider civilized, et cetera, it's got an element of infantilization there, but it's more importantly got a big element of just this supremacist idea that no matter what we do, be it an uprising, be it a revolution, be it a protest, be it a riot, be it, you know, any sort of aspect of social upheaval, when it's done west of Berlin, it is done right.
Yeah.
If anybody west of Berlin rises up or whatever the fuck, that means that things have gone so bad and the people deserve to rise up and do this or that. If anybody west of Berlin burns a cop car, burns a building, blows some shit up, it is always, from one perspective or another, justified because, hey, the civilized guy would never do anything super fucked up. The person from a civilized democratic country has to have had something massively wrong done to them for them to actually want to revolt. And therefore, big revolutions and so on, and in our case, large socialist movements that very often participate in very violent upheaval, be it the German communist parties or the French ones or the British ones, are very rarely defined as tankies because, again, as Hakim beautifully put, they don't come from, you know, the infantilized, degenerate Orient, which just by being as uncivilized as it is, can never truly propose the Marxian idea over to the world. It is the imperial core whose destiny it is to bring forward this complex and advanced idea first and then spread it to the masses of the uneducated vermin of the periphery. If the periphery ever thinks of doing it on their own, well, they de facto are wrong. And yeah. Tanky is just a more commonly used term, at least in this kind of category, in this kind of direction, that encapsulates that perfectly.
Yeah, I think it's very much like a main character syndrome kind of thing, especially in places like the United States, where we do see ourselves as, like Yugopnik, you've said in the past, the U.S. is the main game, everything else is DLC. And I think a lot of Americans do kind of internalize that worldview. Like here in the States, which we've never had a successful socialist movement here, I think it is the height of arrogance to think that Americans can dictate what real socialism looks like. Like we've never, ever even come close. Like the best we had was trying to vote in a socialist, Eugene Debs, and he got, you know, an appreciable number of votes, almost 1 million votes, but that's still nothing. It doesn't hold a candle to the other candidates. So we don't have any experience with real uprisings or things like that. I think it is very ironic, I guess, offensive in a way, to see the loudest voices in the online space being these pockets, these insulated pockets of white, quote-unquote, leftists, you know, social democrats most of the time, who say, you're all doing it wrong. They'll point the finger at China or Cuba, for example, countries that have proud socialist histories that are living these experiments and doing the best they can for their people. And then you've got dudes sitting in gaming chairs being like, these guys are tankies. These guys, they're doing it all wrong. I would do it differently. Yeah. It's like, wow, just unbelievable arrogance.
And the pinnacle of them, what makes it even worse, is that these people tend to be the least well-read about these topics.
Oh, yeah.
When you dig deep into it, they know next to fucking nothing. I'll give an example. I won't name this particular person, but he's big in this silly space online. And by the way, again, just to reiterate, the internet isn't real. The fact that you see these people on Twitter and whatnot, literally, it's not that. Please go into an actual organizational space. Agitate, educate. When you enter into
tanky propaganda, space, don't listen to this fucking red fash cunt. Yeah.
Yeah, but when you actually go do that, you never see this. But anyways, one of these gems, the other day, I remember somebody sent me a clip of them reading some text, somebody asked him a question in his chat, and it was like, have you been seeing something about Kosovo and Bosnia? And he's like, Kosovo and Bosnia? What's that? This dude who's been streaming for years, pretending to have the answers about all things, and particularly being the leftist spokesman. Absolute clown. And he has to go out of his way to be like, what the fuck is Bosnia and Kosovo? Not only is it like the largest NATO intervention in Europe that took place in those, like, you dumb fuck. And yeah, anyways, these tend to be the people, and it's incredibly disappointing. But we'll get into this a little bit more.
I think it might be worth mentioning here that you can think of it as tanky being the new commie. Like, people don't use commie anymore because it sounds silly. Like, you know, you see these old propaganda films and you're like, hey, this guy seems like a commie, he's a red. And it's like, if you heard someone say that, you'd laugh at them because it's just goofy old Red Scare propaganda. So they can't say that. So, oh, suddenly there's this new term that means essentially the same thing. It's someone who supports a quote-unquote authoritarian regime or whatever, so you have to dismiss them out of hand. So it's, it's, you know, the same way it was used back in like the 50s, the term tanky is used by liberals who have adopted a radical aesthetic because they realize at some level that liberals are cringe, but when push comes to shove, they still parrot the State Department line. It's just anti-communism repackaged for the terminally online.
Brilliant, brilliant point. Because when you say commie, when you say something about the communist idea and so on and so on, especially online, let's be honest, you will get a shit ton of negative feedback, which is basically a shit ton of trolling, and a shit ton of either shit ton of trolling or people like explaining to you why you are objectively wrong. But when you use this term that nobody really knows what it is, but people know what it is, but they don't know what it is, but they know what it is, then nobody gives you shit. It is brilliant point, JT. It is a manipulation of typical Red Scare tactics applied by the modern liberal who is too afraid of sounding like a conservative. It is just a continuation of classical fucking virtue signaling and the online political discourse where you win because you got more comments and more retweets. And nowadays you will get less if you call somebody a dirty commie, especially if you're followed by all these respectable libs and so on. They'll say, who the fuck am I following? What the fuck is this sort of language that they're using? But instead of that, use tanky, use Russian bot, this or that, Winnie the Pooh, Chinese Chimpiling guy, and your liberal buddies will all click retweet.
Yep.
Very good point. I haven't thought of that. Very good point.
Another thing that is like with tanky being overused to like a point of absurdity, there's another general usage, which is a caricature. This person doesn't exist, but it's used to supposedly label somebody who uncritically supports everything a current or former socialist nation did or does. These people don't exist. One example that sometimes is used is the joke that some people say where they're like, oh, Stalin did nothing wrong. This is a meme. It's set online as a joke, usually to piss these type of people off. It's never meant intent. Nobody ever sincerely means to say that Stalin did nothing wrong or anything like this. Likewise with Lenin or Mao or whoever else. No one believes this. I don't think I can't
well, it's about the same. You could say the same thing about anybody and it would be absurd. But like, you know, like, oh, George Washington did nothing wrong. Oh, Charlie Chaplin did nothing wrong. Like, obviously, it's an absurd statement to make because every human being throughout their lifetime does things wrong. They make mistakes and all that stuff. So,
Except me.
I'm always right.
Except
always
you got correct.
Right. The correct take haver over here. With that said, though, you won't ever find a more critical and nuanced view of former socialisms, current socialism.
That from people that are called tankies and shit, right? Yeah. Sorry, but it's literally.
It's not even like it's right. Of course, they're in every space of any kind, particularly.
Yeah, but the others just say because it's bad. Yeah, this bad. Like, sorry, please continue. It just triggers me. Yeah.
No, but I completely agree. Yeah, and sometimes you get into a political space online, particularly, which you should, do something more productive with your time, I guess. But you're gonna have some people who are a bit silly, of course, and they don't take it entirely seriously. And then you might hear some silly opinions, but that doesn't reflect the actual content of a movement, right? And people will be like, tankies, what are they? There are literally hundreds of millions of Communist Party members.
Yeah. Some of them are pedophiles. Some of them probably killed their grandma and ate a finger. A lot of them probably eat their own shit. So are we supposed
My point being is that there's so many, number one, people who, first of all, like, this is a real political trend. So you need to reflect by the general average of this trend, not by people on the extremes in particular, like, I mean, in personal behavior or something like this, right? If you're looking at some fucking 13-year-old on a Reddit thread, that's not particularly representative of a middle, what I'm trying to say is you shouldn't compare, like, the 13-year-old on some Reddit thread and consider that to be what, for example, Marxism-Leninism is. Instead, you should compare it to, or your reference value should be the general average of this movement, which is usually represented by active participants within the movement, usually in already ruling communist parties. What that means is, like, some, I don't know, bureaucrat that deals with, like, irrigation water or something somewhere in Vietnam. That's the guy. That is the tanky that you're looking for. Not the fucking 12-year-old, okay, on some meme page. My point being is this. The actual critical look and nuance that you're looking for, you will most likely find with these people that you're criticizing, which is also a little bit ironic. That doesn't mean that there aren't people who are a little bit silly with it, but you have to learn to kind of be an adult and differentiate between people who are genuinely just being either comedic or trying to stir shit online to get people to, you know, troll, like, just to troll a little bit, versus people who are actually, you know, serious about their political convictions and do have an argument that they want to, you know, put forward, or discussion that they want to have.
We have an episode on this, dear listener. Like, if you want to hear what it sounds like when these dirty tankies do self-crit, when we look back at past experiments and say, okay, this was an excess, or this could have been done better, we have that. And you're not really going to find that elsewhere, especially among the bad faith critics you see on Twitch or on YouTube or whatever.
And my favorite part is that episode that JT is talking about. It's like an hour and a half that we had, and we had to cut it short.
Yeah,
because we could sit there and be talking for hours about this nonsense. That's number one. And number two, again, a good litmus test, and this is my what I always recommend. Whoever you're listening to, if they're particularly if they're particularly dismissive, that's the word I'm looking for, of former socialism or a particular topic like this, ask and actually interrogate what they know, and you'll find that 99 out of 100 times it's going to be just the most superficial high school level, like American high school level anti-communist garbage. It's not going to be anything worthwhile, and that's when you realize that you shouldn't be listening to these people. But yeah, I'd like to just lightly move on to authoritarian discourse, just for a moment. And to quote our favorite authoritarian JT, have these gentlemen ever seen these nuts? but all right, not to use like truisms of that have been repeated 1,000 times over, but revolution is not a dinner party, okay? We're having fun here on the podcast because this is meant to be just kind of entertain you and maybe educate you a little bit. But when it comes to real political analysis and action upon that analysis that you make, if you have correct theory and you carry it out, then you will have to meet forces that are hell-bent on maintaining their power and killing and maiming and torturing, doing all this to do that, to maintain that the power and privilege and property and whatnot. At some point, you have to realize that if you are serious about going about socialism, as history has proven, you don't just vote it in. We have an entire episode on this, the reform versus revolution thing. You can't just fucking vote it in. I wish that would be my preference if it were possible, but it isn't. And if it isn't possible, then you have to have differing approaches. These approaches can be like the Cuban experience, where they exhausted all legal pathways until then they considered armed struggle, or many other examples that exist throughout history. The point being that at some point, there is a clash between the powers that be, the current ruling class, the bourgeoisie, the ones who own the means of production and want to maintain that power and control, and the people who are hoping to try to build a better world. And that's not just a bunch of, you know, blankists, 20 fucking people in a boat somewhere. Usually it is a mass movement of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. In China, hundreds of millions of people were mobilized for revolution. Right, this is not something that happens on a dime. It's not something that that you can do with silk gloves. It is not a dinner party. Revolution is serious business, and as a result of this, you're going to have to end up taking what some would deem authoritarian measures. My particular point to people who have a not pragmatic, not philosophical, that's not even the correct term. This, they're incredibly rigid about their anti-authoritarianism, which, fair enough, it's good. I'm happy that you have this approach. It's coming from a good place. But my question to these types, these libertarian communist types or whoever it may be, why, or even liberals, how would you make your revolution? We've seen what the Vietnamese had to do. We've seen what the Cubans had to do. We've seen what the Soviets had to do. We've seen what the Chinese had to do. We've seen what every single movement on earth has had to do to conquer power, particularly leftist movements. Not one single one, not a single one of these, has been able to conquer and maintain state power through just acquiescing and making, what's it called, concessions and meeting in the middle with the current powers that be. In fact, the ones that have been the most successful have been the ones that have been, quote-unquote, the most, quote-unquote, quote-unquote, authoritarian. Does that mean that this is what I want, that this is the correct act? No, that depends on the time and place and the circumstances. But at the end of the day, and this is the crux of the matter, and this is what proves, I think, my point, even the most, quote-unquote, libertarian and anarchist experiments that have existed in our history as the left, even these ones, the most successful of which, the ones that weren't crushed immediately, the ones that didn't evaporate in front of the very first sight of reaction, these ones resorted to so-called authoritarian policies to actually get things done. In Spain, they had prisons for political prisoners. They had a secret police of sorts. They had mandatory conscription. They had labor discipline. Literally every single thing that was criticized, people of this strand criticized the early Soviet government of doing, the Spanish revolutionaries had to eventually resort to the same exact thing. And that's the only thing that managed to keep them alive for the period that they did, but then they eventually collapsed because of other organizational issues. If the boys will allow me my final point, the anti-authoritarianism point is really misplaced, because the real authoritarianism that we see every single day happens under capitalism. Capital forcefully imposes and enforces itself on top of us, on top of all of us, day in and day out. It not only conquers state power in both historically in the imperial core as well as in the imperial periphery through incredibly violent and despicable means, from enslavement to colonialism and whatnot. Not only this, but to maintain power, the amount of barbarity that would have to be carried out that continues to this day, from things as blatant as, for example, the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, like this sort of stuff, to the very benign-seeming but still incredibly violent and exploitative forms of unequal exchange and imperialism, neocolonial setups, all of this. This is how capitalism maintains itself. Your anti-authoritarianism is in a sense, a concession and a granting of an easy victory to the real authoritarianism that we face under capitalism every single fucking day.
But it's also an incredible privilege to be able to hold those beliefs and engage in this mental masturbation, this, you know, political wonkery, because your life will not be affected by the policies that you are espousing. Your life won't be affected.
Exactly.
You've got no skin in the game. Like it's not your livelihood that's at risk. You're not the one being crushed under the boot or all these things. Yeah. You live in this little isolated little bubble where you can talk about this stuff, 8 hours a day on stream. But another thing I wanted to talk about just a little bit is, Hakeem, you mentioned like people will criticize labor camps or the secret police. Yeah. And guess what? We have those too under capitalism. Mm. We don't call them those things. We have
far more extensive too.
Exactly. Yeah, we've got plainclothes officers. Ooh. We've got unmarked police cruisers. We've got the, maximum security prisons. We've got labor camps in that we put prisoners to work for 13
private
cents
capital.
A day for private capital to manufacture hand sanitizer.
Oh, but the Soviets did the same thing, eh?
Exactly.
But they closed it when? In 1960 something?
Oh,
okay.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
It's we have to, what people never consider is the way language is used to twist our perception. Mm. It's capitalist governments versus socialist regimes, state censorship versus corporate terms and conditions, things like that. And on another note, literally every government on earth is authoritarian. It just means that some group has the authority to make decisions. Wouldn't you rather the larger portion of society who actually does the work be the ones to wield that authority? Someone's going to wield it, right? What gives Jeff Bezos or Mark Zuckerberg or Donald Trump or whoever, the ultra wealthy, the right to dictate that our lives should become increasingly unbearable every year? That doesn't make any sense. Why would you defend that? But to really drive the point home about the authoritarianism of capitalist regimes, the United States has the largest prison population in history, both per capita and by sheer numbers. The police will brutalize you for the crime of being poor. They routinely bulldoze homeless camps and destroy the tiny handful of possessions these people have in this world. If you don't work, you starve. And no, you don't get to say, oh, those people are just lazy. Okay, sure, some people are just lazy. But what about those who are physically or mentally incapable of holding down a steady job? There are no accommodations made for those people. They drew the short straw. They are worthless according to the logic of the market. People don't talk about authoritarianism under capitalism, but it is the most, you know, if we want to even use the term, it's the most authoritarian system there is.
I would like to draw a little parallel if you will indulge me or allow me. This is the thing that always irritates me. I've made this point so often. There is a general projection of everything that capitalism does on socialism.
Yes.
They like to pretend that, for example, oh, under socialism, they used to spy on everything. Oh, don't you? Oh, the Stasi, the German secret police, these German secret police, they had a mile-long corridor with fucking paperwork. Like, literally every bureaucrat, like, every fucking country. That's a point for another time, all right, when you didn't have computers. Of course you're going to have shelves upon fucking shelves of paperwork and documentation. These people have never stepped inside a bureau in their lives, anyone who actually finds this this impressive or terrifying. But meanwhile, under capitalism, under your current system, not only do you live in basically practically bugged houses, right? There are people with their phones and Alexa, all this fucking garbage, which, by the way, people will be like, oh no, but in Google, you can go and turn it off and it won't be listening to you. Fair enough. Yeah, sure. But we know for a fact that the CIA can spy on people's conversations through turned off TVs, yeah, for fuck's sake. You think they can't look through do the same through your fucking phone if they wanted to, I'm not trying to be like, oh, paranoid, everybody's listening to you. No, that would be way too much effort into it. No, it's far more benign. Capitalism spies on everything you do in order to sell you shit. So it's not even to protect you, right? If it were to be, you know, right? And people, this is another point that's like, oh, but under socialism, were they protecting you? Yes, of course. My fuck, do you know how many terrorist attacks had been stopped? This gets very irritating because I can go on for a very long, for an extensive amount of time, but I'll just try to keep myself kind of, you know, summary. People don't, I think, read enough, so that's why they have these opinions, and that's why they're content with just being wrong about this. Just to give a simple example, the amount of sabotage, confirmed, documented sabotage, mm-hmm, that occurred in, like, the 30s in the Soviet Union, for example, it's mind-boggling. We have mountains of concrete evidence. This isn't just some guy says it. No, there are people who had no fucking skin in the game. You had American business experts that would have to go over to the Soviet Union to, basically, when the Soviet Union would import capital from, like, the United States, for example, machinery and whatnot, and you had technical specialists that would go from the U.S. These people aren't communists. They don't identify the Soviet Union. They're going there to do a job. That's it. And they would be like, every single machine we brought, all of a sudden somebody dumps, like they go in to bed at night, they go wake up in the morning and the machine is bashed up, or somebody dumped fucking sand and salt and shit into the oil, and now it's fucking ruined. This expensive millions of dollars worth machine is fucking ruined. And this happened across the Soviet Union from Vladivostok to the fucking Caspian Sea. People don't realize the amount. Right, and this, by the way, this, now reproduce this in every single socialist experiment across every single year to this day. Reproduce this. Now imagine when it comes to, for example, okay, an oil refinery plant, this is not a big deal, but imagine if it's bridges,
yeah,
right? Imagine if it's like civilian infrastructure, like hospitals and schools, which, by the way, were regularly targeted in Ukraine by the fascists, by the OUN, was regularly targeted. School kids were regularly targeted by these fucking people. My point being, to be like, oh, surveillance in general is a bad thing, is an incredibly infantile and silly take. It doesn't mean that means everybody should be surveilled all the fucking time. That's not what the intention here. But my point being is, if you have such a big issue with what occurred in, for example, the Soviet Union or East Germany or wherever else, then you should be much more outraged at what occurs to you right now under capitalism. But you're not. You're living your day-to-day life and you don't give a shit. Mm. And it shows that this is an ideological thing. Either you had been affected by the general milieu of anti-communist propaganda around you, and that's why you believe the things that you do, and you can't be that, like, you can't be faulted for this, or you just generally are myopic about this. And I don't mean the people who are listening to us right now. I mean the people who hold these opinions, the streamer types and liberals and the people who live in this existence where everything that socialism supposedly did happens under capitalism and to a far worse degree, yet people are just living their fucking life and they don't give a shit.
It's to an extent, it's a continuation of, like, the previous point that you made. It's not even necessarily that, you know, for example, surveillance was done over where these commies lived, but it's surveillance was done in these weird foreign
places that innately would not do surveillance in a civilized and well-regulated manner in which we do it here. It was overused. It was done badly. It conflicted with core democratic values and so on and so on. But you're spending hours talking about this, days. You're writing books on this when interacting with a fucking NSA officer or something. You would immediately say, no, man, don't you see just how many people want to absolutely destroy America? Of course, unfortunately, we need these secret services, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, for me, but not for thee. Blah, 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 blah. Mm. Not for the yes for me or whatever the fuck the term is. It's absolutely fucking batshit. But even if you use idiotic monkey logic, like ooga ooga Neanderthal shit to explain the hypocrisy of calling one thing authoritarian or not, my friend, if capitalism this, but socialism all this, but without the boss stealing surplus value, it's already less authoritarian than what it is now. Literally, I'm using the most dumb fucking monkey ass fucking way of explaining shit. And it's still less authoritarian. One slight, which is not slight, which is extremely fucking important, which is the capitalist class existing in your state, removed from the equation. Almost all, we have historic fucking data. Almost all previous socialist experiments and states have never, ever, ever utilized the power of the state to such a ridiculously fucked up level the way capitalist states have and continue to do to this day. But even if we imagine that they did, but they didn't have fucking capitalists around, respectfully, that's less authoritarian for me. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm comparing apples and oranges here, but I guess for some fucking people, they need to be sent a clip where I'm talking to them as if they're fucking gorillas, because I guess they fucking are. I don't know.
I would like to add just one thing, because I really agree with you. I think the monkey brain explanation, it definitely, I think it hits the spot to make it much easier to understand. But the one thing that, a liberal in the wall, I guess, who may be also happening to listen to us right now. If you hear what we're saying and you still feel like, no, but it's still wrong. Fair enough. I'll meet you in the middle. Let's say, yes, okay, fine. We're meeting in the middle. This is wrong. All right. How do we overcome it? All right. We'll even get over the question of revolution. Let's just say there is a socialist power and you're in it now. All right. Let's ignore how you got there. You're in it now. And you have former disgruntled, people who are associated with the state, members of the bourgeoisie, other potential social classes, depending on what kind of country you're coming from, right? If it's semi-feudal or not, etc. You have all sorts of disgruntled groups that have been shifted out of power that want to return. Not only do they want to return, they're getting funding from other powers much larger than your current country, which has just emerged into this socialist presence, however it may have done so. Not only is these people are getting funding, they're getting guns, they're getting diplomatic aid, they're basically being recognized as some sort of rightful force to political power in your country. Are you just going to keep meeting these people in the middle and try to solve this through diplomacy when they're attacking symbols of the state, let's say? In that case, I mean, they're attacking party offices and they're blowing up bureaus and they're, this shit, actual terrorist activity. Okay, let's not even say terrorist activity. Let's just say that these people are genuinely existing as a foreign force, completely disconnected from the people who are currently within your new socialist country. How would you go about dealing with this, especially if they're violent? That's my issue. And the thing is, and this is what I believe is the crux of the matter, and I'm sorry I'm going to sound a little bit condescending to some white Western leftists, but I at some point it has to come. I think there's a lot of privilege that comes from being mostly white in highly industrialized imperial core countries where you've never been at the other end of, let's say, state repression of that kind, or not even state repression, but having insecurity in the safety situation within your country. I'll give an example, all right? Prior to 2003 in Iraq, there used to be a outlawed political party which was supported by Iran. These people would regularly resort to terrorist activity. Not only would they resort to terrorist activity, they would regularly blow up police stations, they would blow up party headquarters, they would try to blow up bureaus. These people would kill dozens of people with each single attack. when you exist in such circumstances, you'd like to think that there it maybe makes some sense to resort to some level of quote-unquote authoritarianism, be it at least, you know, trying to find the cells of these type of people, or trying to see how they recruit, or trying to find out where they get their guns, or trying to find the leaders, or what have you. And of course, this is a two-way street, because the same methods that are used against people who would try to fight against the socialist power, let's say, would be, for example, in a capitalist state that would use the similar methods against, for example, leftist forces. But again, the conversation gets tiring because it really is as simple as one side is right and one side is wrong.
Yeah.
Okay? If you're in this sphere, one side wants actual, like, you know, real freedom for people, not the bullshit fucking, oh, the market will decide. It means people will have the right to education. Women will have the right to, you know, for example, not be confined to the home if they don't want to be, or not be forced to only solely fucking work and give up everything that they consider to be part of their identity, as one example. Another example is children will get food at fucking school. They won't go into lunch debt, school lunch fucking debt. There will be education. They won't be fear for going to school and be shot up, for fuck's sake. Medical aid, or regular access to medications and doctors and healthcare. This is real freedom, concrete freedom, shit that you actually would take for granted if it's gone. The one side wants this: an end to homelessness, employment, proper development and care for the environment, industrial growth in a way that works towards the population. One side wants this. The other side wants to use all the repressive powers of the state to maintain profits for an incredibly narrow sliver at the very top, and fuck the planet, fuck regular people, fuck children, put lead in the water. It's just, it gets very tiring, the entire conversation it does. But sorry, I rambled a bit.
No, that's exactly it. And I think that's what people get a little wrapped around the axle on. It's like, oh, you know, if we do this, that makes us no better than them. It's like, no, you are better than them simply for the fact that your beliefs are for the good of the vast majority of people and opposed to the interests of those who would keep the majority of people down. That is simple arithmetic. You are an adult. You can make this decision and say, you know what? Yeah, one of these is morally superior. You can't say, oh, you know, they all have their merits. No, you make a choice at some point.
Suppressing fascism is the morally correct choice. You're not being bankrupt in your fucking... Yeah. Ooh, you're not defeating your anti-authoritarian tendencies by being... You know, and that's the, and again, like, at the end of the day, there should be a framework for all of this. At the end of the day, everybody should be grounded in the theory. You should read, you should study historical socialisms, you should see what they experience. You should read into exactly the issues that your current country faces, how you would go about solving them. And then only with this extensive study, I think, can you have the right to then maybe say that, hey, you know what, we should take this route. If you really want to lay, if you believe that there would be a route that would lead to success based on quote-unquote anti-authoritarian principles. And I will say, as a person, as an Iraqi, who would love nothing more than to see the success of leftists within the United States and other imperial countries, please, if you truly think that you can get into state power, maintain state power, suppress capitalism, suppress markets, develop socialism, and do this all while aligning yourself or maintaining your anti-authoritarian principles, please do it and show us the way.
Yeah.
Please. I'm not saying this to be a dick. I'm not saying this as a, you know, it's a genuine request. If you truly believe you know what is right, then please show us the way. Maybe you genuinely do know what's right, and maybe you'll be the next fucking head on the poster. All right. But so far, from our personal experiences, as well as what history has taught us, there is one way, and sadly, it isn't the, it's the tanky way. I don't know what to say.